And welcome back. You are listening to Out Chicago right here on WCPT. Sunday brunch with your gay best friends. We're trying to bring issues of the LGBTQ community to the fore. Scott Duff here along with Whitney Chitwood.
Hello.
Hello. There we are. And as you may know, the Chicago municipal elections are coming up on February 26th. And joining us on the phone is Cook County Board President and mayoral candidate Tony Preckwinkle. Tony Preckwinkle, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to join us today.
Hey there, Tony.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, we appreciate you taking time again. You know, Absolutely. This is the first time on our show. We're thrilled to have you.
Welcome.
And I want to just start with a very simple question we've been asking all of our mayoral candidates. Why do you run for mayor?
You know, look, we live in a beautiful city with great neighborhoods and some tremendous challenges. And there are challenges, frankly, that I worked hard to address and have experience addressing when I was alderman of the 4th Ward for almost 20 years, 19 years, five terms. I always begin, since I'm a teacher by profession, about talking about the importance of strengthening our neighborhood public schools. We have great schools in some neighborhoods, but unfortunately, the quality of our schools is often determined by our zip code, and we really need to provide access to great opportunities and great education for all of our kids in all of our neighborhoods. You know, as a teacher, I believe education is an escalator, and this is a way in which we can increase the opportunities for our young people. The second thing I speak to always is the importance of community building. When I was alderman of the 4th Ward, we built 1,500 units of housing, and most of that was affordable rental housing. And I think it's really important that we rebuild the neighborhoods that have struggled so long with disinvestment and neglect. The third thing is clearly we've got to address the challenges of police-community relations. You know, there's no way in which we're going to do better in solving crime and address the violence in our communities unless we have better police-community collaboration. And that's something that I worked on with our community residents and police commanders and officers on the beat. As alderman of the 4th Ward. So those are the three challenges that I see that the city faces, and they're all about equity and opportunity.
Yeah, so well, then let's start with you're talking about the Chicago public school system. You were an educator with the Chicago Public Schools for a very long time. So what is your plan on improving Chicago's educational system?
Well, as I said, you know, we put a lot of energy over the last couple decades into magnet schools and selective enrollment schools and charter schools. And those have provided great options for parents. But we have to be sure that we have great neighborhood schools in all of our communities as well. Actually, I'd say first and foremost. So we need to invest in those neighborhood schools. And it teaching, you know, clearly teachers are at the crux of this, but we also need in many of our schools social workers and psychologists to provide the wraparound
Absolutely.
Services that our young people need in order to succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I was a teacher myself, not here in Chicago.
Oh, good.
Yes, I understand. The role of the teacher is an incredible role, often overlooked, especially when it comes to, you know, most of the times they're the only adult that will be there listening to them for a while. You know, you are with these children, you're with these young people, you're shaping these minds. I'm a firm believer in education and starting with the Chicago public schools. And we do need to get social workers into those communities because that is where people can really, really help. You're in favor of an elected school board, correct?
Right. You know, I favor first a moratorium on school closings because school closings are a very public disinvestment in neighborhoods, painful disinvestment in neighborhoods.
Yes.
I'm in favor of a cap on charter schools. We should not have any more charter schools until we address our neighborhood public school
yep,
challenges.
I
support an elected school board. I think it's really important that community residents are invested in their schools. And in the present circumstance, without real representation from across the city, we don't have it.
100% in agreement there. So you also are talking about... As we all know here in Chicago, public safety and rebuilding trust with the Chicago Police Department is a huge issue for many, many people. If elected, how do you plan to tackle this? This is such a huge problem.
Well, you know, the first thing I should say is early in my teaching career, I lost a student to gun violence. She was killed in a drive-by. She happened to be on her own front porch, wrong place at the wrong time. And I know how devastating that was for our school community. There was an empty chair in my classroom for the rest of the year. And, you know, let me just say, the only way in which we're going to address the challenges we face is better police-community collaboration. And, you know, I think we can see the truth of that in Chicago. You know, we've invested a lot in cameras and shot spotters and surveillance equipment, and yet we have a murder rate that is more than New York and Los Angeles combined. We're the third largest city in the country, and we have more murders than New York and Los Angeles combined. We have to have better police-community relations, and that means working not just with our local commanders and our police officers, but providing for better training for our officers, providing for better supervision, and holding them accountable. You know, we have more murders in New York and Los Angeles, and we have a 15% closure rate. That is, a suspect is arrested in only 15% of the murders. And nationally, the average is like 62 or 63%. So we need better training, better supervision, but we also need to hold our police officers accountable. And we need, frankly, to have an Office of Criminal Justice in our mayor's office so we can bring the stakeholders together. We can distribute grants to community organizations that try to stem the pipeline into our criminal justice system and deal with violence in our streets. And those are, you know, violence prevention initiatives, anti-recidivism initiatives. Let's try to keep people who've been in the criminal justice system from going back, and restorative justice initiatives. All of those are community supports that we've provided in the county through our Justice Advisory Council, and the city needs to step up and do the same. You know, New York and Los Angeles for more than a decade have had similar offices, violence prevention or criminal justice, Office of Criminal Justice, and they spend, you know, $30 million or more a year on these initiatives. And over time, it's had a dramatic impact on their murder rate. And we need to do the same thing. We need to invest in initiatives that stem the pipeline into our criminal justice system and try to address the violence in our communities.
Well, you know, you were talking
by working with at-risk youth and those who have been in the criminal justice system.
Well, and you're speaking about a police accountability, and yet we have the sentencing of Van Dyke, you know, for the murder of Laquan McDonald, and many people think that was a very light sentencing. Where do you fall on that?
Well, there was a pretty difficult week there, in which first the three officers who covered up Jason Van Dyke's murder of Laquan McDonald were acquitted.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Van Dyke got 81 months for the murder of Laquan McDonald. And then in that same week, the young man who murdered Hydea Pendleton, a student who went to school in my ward and who was murdered less than a mile from my house, got 84 years. So there clearly are criminal justice issues.
Yeah. So how do we fix that? I mean, that seems like that can come down from the mayor's office. I mean, this sentencing was kind of ridiculous. And as you were saying, you know, the time does not match the crime, and he's going to probably serve less than 3 years.
I think we need to hold our officers accountable when terrible, tragic incidents like this happen. And what I usually say is, he's the first officer in 50 years who's been found guilty of murdering one of our residents, but he's surely not the first officer in 50 years who's been guilty of murder. So this is a watershed moment, but the sentence that was meted out was profoundly disappointing. You know, I usually say that, you know, our black and brown young men get longer sentences for drug possession than he got for murder.
Yeah, and that is true. So again, how do we hold these officers accountable? Because I'm sorry to keep harping on this one particular issue, but it just does seem that there is such a disparity between the black and brown communities and the Chicago Police Department.
Well, we need to invest more in community policing. When I was an alderman in the 90s, Mayor Daley, at the suggestion actually of Alderman Moore, who'd heard about our community policing efforts across the country and pushed for community policing here. We invested a lot of money in police, in beat meetings and police community relations. And it was a way for people to know their officers who served them, and for officers to know people in the community who cared about police community relations and public safety. And we have disinvested in community policing. So clearly that's one area where we need to invest. And we also need, I think, and I've been quite clear about this, different leadership in the police department. First of all, somebody who will acknowledge that there's a code of silence in the police department. Mm-hmm. And secondly, who will put an emphasis on accountability and performance, particularly around solving violent crimes.
You briefly mentioned a moment ago about LA's initiative as far as anti-violence. which I think it's imperative to invest and spend time creating positivity, like conducing activities or like community centers in more at-risk communities. Can you talk specifically about things that you see as essential implementation into communities that typically violence comes out of?
Well, we have 77 community areas in Chicago. In 15 of them, however, 70% of the violence takes place. So we know which communities struggle with violence. And it's not just the violence that challenges them. These are communities with low levels of educational attainment, high levels of unemployment. They have under-resourced or closed schools. They're often food deserts. And so we have to have a holistic strategy for dealing with those neighborhoods that involves investment in community-based organizations that focus on employment, that focus on behavioral health services. We have to be sure that we're providing affordable housing in those communities. We have to have a comprehensive strategy for addressing the challenges those communities face. So that's an important part of the effort to deal with the violence. It can't just be about police. We can't just think that we're going to flood communities with police officers and that will solve our problems. It's got to be a more holistic view of the challenges these neighborhoods face, of which violence is one of many.
And investing in the community so they have resources, so they have opportunities to thrive.
Exactly.
Right. And can you, to further expound on that point, do you have specific actions as far as affordable housing and as far as services that you would put in to play?
Well, we have an affordable requirements ordinance, which provides a fund for affordable family housing units, and that program is not working very well. We're not really creating family units in the way that it was envisioned.
Right.
So one of the first things we have to do is look at that program and figure out how we can make it work, or revise it or scrap it so that we can really have the resources we need to build affordable housing. That's got to be the foundation of community development across the city, affordable housing units for families. And we need to invest in community-based organizations that are providing services to at-risk youth, that are providing behavioral health services. We've got to invest in those kind of services for our residents. And one of the things that happened in the Emanuel administration is they closed seven out of 12 mental health clinics. And that clearly has had a negative impact on our communities. When people don't have access to meds and therapy, they often end up in our emergency room at Stroger Hospital in crisis, or they end up in our criminal justice system because they're acting out. So we really need to look holistically at the challenges our communities face.
Thank you for that. Just to switch gears a little bit, you have a plan, or I'm sure you have a plan, for equity and inclusion of the LGBTQ community. We're the big gay show, so
let's
talk about big gay things. So what is your plan for including members of the community, especially trans women?
I have included LGBT members as bureau chiefs and as department heads and in my staff in the president's office. So I've tried to be as inclusive as possible, and that inclusion includes LGBTQ individuals. I think, we really need to focus on the trans community because they face extraordinary levels of discrimination in our city, in our county, in our country. And that's particularly true of trans women. And I know that one of the real challenges is that murders of trans women tend to go unsolved. And, of course, violence against any member of our community, but particularly against discriminated against minorities, should be really taken seriously by the police.
So, but if elected, will you be nominating people or appointing LGBTQ people to positions of power to come into and help to be a part of the council, to be a part of these offices, to be advisors? How will you be hearing our voices and employing our talents?
I've done that as president of the county, and I will surely do that as mayor.
All right. Well, there we go.
Good to hear.
There we go. That is really great to hear.
Yeah.
And you're also for a $15 minimum wage.
I am, and I have a plan to implement that by 2021. Other candidates have said they favor it, but they haven't put forward a plan. My view is to do this 50 cents every 6 months until we get to $15 an hour. And by the way, $15 an hour is not an arbitrary number. It's what it takes for a family of four to be just above the poverty level. So, you know, and we need, in the new economy, employers are attracted to places where there is a diverse and talented labor pool. And workers are attracted to places where decent wages are paid. So those are two reasons for raising the minimum wage in Chicago.
I support that.
Yep.
Yes, great. Now, here's, you know, many folks here in the city are tired of what they call the Chicago political machine and the Burke 4 candidates, which you are considered one of them. What do you want to say to folks to reassure them that who might consider you a part of the Chicago machine, that you are really, you have your interests out for all Chicagoans?
Well, first of all, there's no place for corruption in the city of Chicago. And, you know, I've returned all the money from the Burke fundraiser, and I've taken the strongest position against him. I said that he ought to resign as chairman of the finance committee. I said he ought to resign as committeeman and alderman of the 14th ward. I stripped him of his chairmanship of the judicial slating committee at the Democratic Party. And I've been quite clear that we should not allow our elected officials in Chicago to have dual employment. I was elected alderman in 1991. I've never had an outside job other than the government job that I held, whether it was alderman or president of the county. And that should be the case. That should be the case for every single elected official. You know, and I know this is on people's minds, but as I go around and talk to people, what they're also concerned about is, you know, opportunity in their communities.
Mm-hmm.
Our residents want to be sure that our city is a place where there's opportunity for them and their children. And that's why I talk about the importance of having good neighborhood public schools, about rebuilding our neighborhoods. I've talked about supporting small businesses with the Chicago Micro Lending Institute, you know, small loans, $500 to $50,000 to community businesses to help them start up, to help them maintain their businesses, to help them thrive. I've said that we need to change the rules for the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund so that we can support small businesses with grants instead of rebate programs that require them to put up the money up front. And many of our business people who are African-American, Latinx, or women-owned businesses don't have the resources or access to capital to lay the money out and then get it back. We need to make these programs grant programs so that we can support our neighborhood businesses. So I've talked a lot about opportunity and the ways in which government can be supportive of opportunity in our neighborhoods, and I think that's one of the things that's on people's mind, in addition to decent wages for working people.
Well, Tony Preckwinkle, I know you've got to run. We want to thank you so much for taking time out again from your really, really busy schedule.
Busy.
I know the next couple of weeks are going to be quite a gauntlet for you. So best of luck over the next couple of weeks. To learn more about Tony Preckwinkle, head to tonyforchicago.com. Tony Preckwinkle, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me today.
Thank you, and good luck
Take care.
The next couple of weeks. So
there
we go. All right. Well, and I think
very informative.
I think we should take a little break. And when we come back, it is the final thrilling show-stopping moments about Chicago right here on WCPT.